Hey guys, thanks for watching another episode of The Naturalist Capitalist. I'm not on Twitter anymore, but I'm still alive. We still exist out of the Twitter sphere. I don't know. I think somebody reported me. I think someone was just hovering, waiting to find the right remark, or it was the algorithm. Either way, I'm off Twitter for now. Thanks for checking me out here. I've got my fellow underworld dweller off Twitter. How you doing tonight, Ryan?
Congratulations, Reed.
I've graduated.
Your first major banning. Welcome to the club.
The first of many. Then we got Adam Fitzgerald back on the show. Had him on a week ago. Glad to have you back, Adam. How you doing?
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Oh, absolutely. This is great. Eric Jackman is not on this, so I might try to do a couple impressions, but probably not because, you know, I can't do them nearly as good as he does. Our fourth horseman tonight is DJ Thermal Detonator. We got the 9/11 super ring here. How you doing tonight, man?
Hey, good afternoon. How you doing?
Good. So you haven't been on here, so why don't you just give us a little intro to who you are?
I basically was part of We Are Change LA, and eventually, I mean, I don't want to take up too much time, but eventually got into making films and taking a lot of, actually from a lot of Ryan's work as well, and kind of just remained doing that as the movement kind of folded and fragmented into insanity. So that's about it.
Yeah. So what I've kind of got from at least you and Adam is that you guys kind of were interested in the loose change theory at first, like back in 2000, in the early 2000s, but then it started falling apart. Is that a pretty accurate way to put that?
Yeah.
For me, sure.
Mm-hmm. I hated it from day one. That's the whole reason I made a film, is because their film was so bad and stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, but you were into this. You're the first one into this, right, Ryan? Like, you started doing this pretty early on.
I mean, there was Piper. I didn't know it at the time, but Michael Piper was on it. And Justin Raimondo, to a degree, kind of went like halfway there and then stopped for some reason. Schumann, there are some others, but none of us knew each other. I knew of Raimondo, but he didn't know me then. I think I was the first person to make a movie about it. And I wrote this script. It was called Iraq 9/11 PNAC, All Roads Lead to Israel, on my forum, because forums were the hot thing prior to Facebook and Twitter and stuff. Maybe you have to go back there. And then I got banned on MySpace for starting 9/11 Truth for Grownups on that. It was just impossible because Alex Jones and Loose Change and all the charlatans instantly grabbed over a million people, were spreading their baloney, and the public was very, you know, skeptical of what they saw on TV, as they should be. So they didn't know what to turn to, and so that's why the charlatans were able to grab them, because they prevented rational voices from reaching them. And we started a 9/11 Truth for Grownups on Facebook, and the first day Thermal Detonator and myself were banned from Facebook, so we couldn't participate in our own group. And I basically got consecutive 30-day bans from then on anyway. I barely ever posted in there. I just got some of the pictures in of the debris and stuff. And I probably posted in there a total of 20 times over the whole year and something that was there.
So is there, do you notice a big disparity between you guys and the no planers as far as being banned? You guys are gone way earlier. Is that typical that they stick around longer? Or that's a question to anybody, but
yeah, I mean, well, first of all, they'll ban you from their own group. So I'm trying to argue with people about the Pentagon and say, have a dialogue. Skype me, bitch, was my tagline. I wanted to record it because what they do is you can't text message this stuff out, because 100 people will pile on you and start talking about you to each other and not listening to what you're saying or responding to what you're saying. Like, you're answering their questions and they ignore that and go on to the next question. It's ad hoc hypotheses indefinitely. What about the engine? What about light pole? What about? And it doesn't matter. So I was like, just talk to me. Well, they couldn't handle that, so they ban you. This is, you know, the ratio is 1,000,000 to 1. You got to have somebody smart enough to promote your ideas, right, in a live discussion, but they won't do it. A few, like, fans or whatever have tried to argue 9/11 that I got, and I recorded on Skype and embarrassed the fuck out of them. But even when I could get someone to do that, they would beg me at the end of the conversation not to publish it. I'm like, well, you were so confident and dogmatic and acting like a horse's ass, and now you don't want anybody to hear this conversation. Because the amount of ignorance is Kamala Harris level. Like, I don't know how else to describe it, you know, of the things they don't know about 9/11. And they don't understand. They'll do this bullshit. The Judy Woods crowd is into this. Well, we can't get into the why and the how or whatever until we deal with the what. I'm like, well, you don't have the what right. And what you don't understand is getting the what wrong prevents you from figuring out the when and how and why. Because if you don't have planes and hijackers, there's no paper trail back to the culprits, you know, that are involved. So you just can't even get your foot in the door. They created a giant tar baby. And I lost energy in arguing with these fuckers. And the Nelson and others kept doing it. And we're on the ground and I'm like, I don't know how you're going to We Are Change meetings. Like, that is just, to me, it was a waste of time. Because it's not a waste of time. But I was like, I can't. In that whole course, I had 3 children and this. I'm like, I don't have the fucking time to deal with these dumb fuckers. And then I had a lot of my work stolen by Whitney Webb, which puts it out like, I did this. It's like, no, you didn't, bitch. You didn't do the FOIAs. You didn't do any of this. You got a submarine. You wrote it down. You act like it was yours. So you got those people on the other side. But and then David Sheen wrote a really retarded piece on the dancing Israelis on 9/11 of this year, which I have to address. But I swear, and Adam and Nelson will back me up. If you try and argue this out or tell the truth about 9/11, you will spend way more time dealing with 9/11 kookers than you will with people who just believe the government. Would you agree?
I'd have to definitely agree.
Absolutely. In fact, most of my time is dealing with disinformation online, which is abundant, unfortunately. That's even when I first started back in 2006, but I didn't have a channel then. It was much later. I came late to the party on viral media, but Nelson and Ryan were all long established online. And it was because of them I ran into the geopolitical angle. Actually, when I first started reading about 9/11, it was about 2006. And it was a lot of people talking about the physics of the buildings. Mm-hmm. One of the very first forums I ran into was the James Randi Educational Forum, the JREF Forum. And there was like Tony Zambotti, Stephen Jones, I believe Wayne Costigan, David Chen, one of those guys were there.
And decent magician, too.
Yeah, James Randi. And reading their material is very, for me, it was really, I was taken aback by it because I'm terrible in physics. So that was one thing. And two, I was like, well, that's staying at ground zeros. They got to go beyond that. And I'm very interested in true crime. And so the who, what, when, and why is much more important than, you know, how a building is burned. I've heard Ryan say this before. You know, if your house is burning on fire, you don't care how the building fell down. You want to know who lit the match. That's indeed right. That's the whole geopolitical angle of 9/11. So I decided to go about that route. And very few people were talking about this in early 2005 and 6. And the first people I ran into was the late Justin Raimondo of antiwar.com and Ryan Dawson. In fact, it was Ryan Dawson who was that time. He was wearing a white shirt and doing videos by then. It was talking about the dancing Israelis. I was like, I never heard of anything like this. And I thought, you know, he's just another shill. You don't know what he's talking about. So I researched what he had to say. And to my shock, he was right. I never heard about this. And I lived in New York. I didn't know anything about this. So I decided to go down this route. But I was very I'm self-conscious. I don't like how I sound in my face. So I didn't do videos and then until much later. So I started reading about Middle East culture, Islamic terrorism, fundamentalism, the CIA, the NSA, U.S.-Israeli foreign policy, U.S.-Saudi foreign policy. That took a long time. But The more I learned, the more better prepared I was to relay the information. And I met a lot of people along the way, like Paul Thompson wrote The Terror Timeline, Kevin Fenton, Disconnecting the Dots, you know. And then I met Nelson. I met Nelson on Facebook in 2015. And he was the only person that, besides Ryan, Ryan was just about being banned about every other week at this point. So I barely could speak to him. Nelson, and the only reason why I got in touch with Nelson, because he was talking about the Bajinka plot. And I thought I was the only one talking about this subject. And I really liked what he had to say. And we got along very well. And so at that time, right around 2015 forward, it was Ryan, Nelson, myself. I couldn't name you, probably Ed.
Yeah.
Ed, yeah, but I'm talking about more pronounced people who specifically talk about these subjects.
Mike Rivero.
Very few people. And then
Mike Rivero would link to it, but he had the same issue as me. He's just like, I can't deal with these fuckers anymore. Like, it's just they get you banned on stuff and for hurting their feet, kicking them in the feels. You know, when you say a plane hit the Pentagon, they lose their shit. Like, oh, they would make that my middle name. Like, it's an insult. Ryan, a plane hit the Pentagon toss. And I'm like, yeah, because it did.
It's a religion. That's what I found. Like, when I had that conversation with Burmese last week, I think a lot of people who are against the kooks, like, they get emotional and they just like, how dare you? And I just really didn't do that. I was like, hey, man, look, Flight 93, it makes sense that it was rammed into the ground, that there's nothing left. Yeah. If it had been shot out of the sky, you'd have pieces of the wings and the fuselage and shit all over the place. Like, it was gone in a hole. The only other times that has happened is when a plane is driven into the ground really fast, full of fuel. And like, it's like you're questioning their holy book, because once you take away their craziness, like, you know,
they compare it to crashes where they know they're going down. They put down their landing gear. They try and land at an angle. They don't just spike the nose in the ground on purpose at full speed. But it's not a religion, Reed. It's worse than a religion, because all the religions I know of have some redeeming qualities and some path to redemption, where this is just a cult.
Yeah,
this is just, there's something like, at least in other holy books, it says be good to your neighbors, do some sort of positive message or guide, even though it might be couched in what we might consider superstition or the supernatural. It has a good message. And of course, people can interpret it the way they want. That's the problem, is it's all up to the, you know, are you going to get a Ron Paul or a Pat Robertson? You never know. But with the 9/11 kook movement, there's nothing good in it. All it does is, first of all, I call them 9/11 deniers. That's what they do, the thing they do. They're 9/11 deniers, because when you're denying an airplane, you are denying September 11th. Where are all the people who died who were on the plane? Some of them have this wonderful mental gymnastics where they're like, oh yeah, well, the plane full of people actually went to Ohio or the ocean and killed them over there, but a different thing hit the Pentagon. I don't even want to waste time on the stupidity. I'd rather talk about like what did happen, since all of us are here, you know?
Yeah.
And I wanted to give props to Mike Rivero too. That's another name. He was like a plane. He said a plane hit the Pentagon. That's all he was doing. Right. And man, they went after him, because back then it was like Alex Jones, Rivero, Jeff Rentz. That was sort of the circle at GCN or whatever. And it was like he had stepped on their nuts or something. He's like, but I mean, this guy worked for NASA and stuff. He's like, I mean, there's debris of Flight 77 in the building, you know. But the propaganda from Loose Change did more damage than any of the rest. They're worse than Richard Gage, because he basically just used their crap. They're worse than Judy Wood, because she's so ridiculous that almost nobody would gravitate to it. They're worse than Fetzer, for this, because he's just as ridiculous as Judy with his miniature nukes and stuff.
JFK.
Chris Boland, who's also a plagiarist, said a missile hit Building 6, so he basically shot himself in the nads. A missile did not hit Building 6, by the way. You want to know what hit Building 6? Building 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Nelson and I met in person in L.A. actually about JFK research. And then he was at the screening for Empire Mask and contributed to that film about the, a lot of people don't know, but there were flights after 9/11 that got attempted hijackings. There's a lot of stuff that people don't know. about the event and what the plan was, where the plane in Pennsylvania was actually going. There's so many questions, and I wish we could have subpoena power and get at it, because we have them dead to rights with Saudi and Israeli intelligence involved in the event. And of course, our own government refusing a shoot down order and allowing these people in. There's a lot you could chalk up to incompetence. I'm like, I don't care whether you think it's on purpose or incompetence, because as we go through it, you're going to be like, how much incompetence does there have to be before you see complicity? But the result's the same, and heads should roll. And there were no consequences for anybody in the Bush administration. A lot of them got promoted, actually. And then the elephant in the room is how it got attached to the Iraq war. And I feel like you don't even have to get into the Saudi-Israeli role or any of that deep to show that they definitely lied about Iraq by saying that, by attaching the anthrax portion of 9/11 to Iraqis. And then Colin Powell, who just died, right? He's infamous for his little anthrax speech, right? He went to the UN with his mock vial of anthrax, and the material he's quoting with his cartoons is of mobile weapons labs from Judith Miller's dovetailing off the tale from Gary Schmidt and Fred Barnes and James Woolsey, who brought this garbage to the Weekly Standard, published in Bill Kristol and Robert Kagan's, who are both PNAC members. Their establishment was financed by Lockheed Martin at the Weekly Standard, claiming that Atta met in Prague, and at this Prague meeting, he got anthrax from Iraq. No, he didn't. And I know people my age that sign up to go fight in Iraq thinking they had something to do with September 11th, and they didn't. And all the media piled on, where they had Time Magazine would have a picture of Osama bin Laden, Saddam Hussein, And you would see it on Fox News, Bill O'Reilly, they do a story about Osama bin Laden and then Saddam Hussein, just trying to morph those two things together in your mind. We all know Israel wanted a war with Iraq, and all the pre-war lies about Iraq came from an Israeli cabal, and the lies about anthrax came from Israeli security sources and a super Zionist, James Woolsey, who got his job on behalf of Epstein blackmailing Clinton. And so this was a Zionist war and an event at minimal taken advantage of by Zionists, I would say further. And that is all missing. If they don't connect it to Iraq, they think we went in for the petrodollar or oil or some other retarded reason. And they're just omitting all the solid information. I'm like, no, neocons brought us to war in Iraq. And the neocons are a bunch of Jewish supremacist Zionists. Most have worked in the DOD or the vice president's office. And they lied about the anthrax. And that's those notes said death to America, death to Israel. And that got blamed on Al-Qaeda, too. And it wasn't. And the man they ultimately blamed it on, Bruce Ivins, was suicided, as was another doctor in his at Fort Detrick. And they're just like, man. And post after he died, they proved he couldn't have made the anthrax in his lab. And I was like, OK, well, if he couldn't have done it, he also could not have mailed all these things from different locations all at once by himself. But they seem totally uninterested in one of the greatest crimes in American history of who sent this anthrax to U.S. senators. They wanted to pin it on somebody. What, they couldn't get Stephen Hatfield. And the reason they targeted Stephen Hatfield is because B'nai B'rith and the ADL said was like ardent that it had to be this guy. And it wasn't. And then Bruce Ivins was the backup blame. And then he died near July 4th. I actually was on Scott Horton's radio show like 5 days before he died, saying he was a dead man walking. And he was. They're totally uninterested. I thought after Colin Powell's death, we could get some a breath of air in it, saying, hey, Colin Powell died. Remember that speech about anthrax he gave in the Iraq war? Where'd he get that intel from? Nobody cares. And nobody cares because of the 9/11 kookers.
That's part of it.
Yeah.
They don't put no focus. They don't put no effort into it. They don't even, they don't even acknowledge that. That whole thing was even kept as a criminal case separate from the FBI dragnet, when it should have been put together.
Yeah. So let's kind of walk through this chronologically, I guess. Nelson, why don't you tell us about the hijackers, who they were, why they went through with this?
Jeez. You're talking about 19 hijackers. So sure. I couldn't, sit here to explain, the profiles of 19 people, but it is I mean, why they did it. Well, I mean, I believe they all did it for different reasons. But the thing that I think to point out, the thing that's important is looking at where they came from, nationalities. I mean, you know, most of the time people think of it as a Saudi conspiracy, but, you know, we're only looking at 15 of them being Saudi nationals. One of them even was actually Yemeni, which was Khalid al-Madar. He was only a Saudi national. Then you've got the two from United Arab Emirates. Then you've got Zayed al-Jar, the Lebanese. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Mohammed Atta, the ringleader. But the real question, yeah, the Egyptian, Mohammed Atta, the Egyptian. And then, you know, then you need to, you know, then there's the question of, well, as far as the ringleaders go, it's why, you know, the thing with the Hamburg cell, you know, there's a lot of questions of you know, whether these hijackers actually even went on the planes in the first place. But they certainly seem to have been these ringleaders, but they don't ever cross it. They don't ever cross paths with the Saudis. These Saudis are all, you know, they either, some of them fight in Chechnya, some of them, you know, fight within the Balkans. But, you know, why they did it, you know, they, yeah, I think they were brainwashed, you know, into it. And I think there may have been some circumstances that they didn't even not know that the plot was going to be a suicide mission. And only the pilot did, too, you know, because they don't have confessions with you know, all these written confessions with all the hijackers. There's only three of them that do. There's no will. There's no nothing, you know. So
there's plans to get married after the event. There's notes to girlfriends and
yeah. So there's that possibility. I mean, there's even a possibility of some sort of drug use even on some of these some of the people involved. You know, that they may have been inebriated with something as well. I don't doubt that, but you know, that's from my own research looking into like terrorism in the 80s and the 70s as well. So,
and the early 90s, like around 93.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's why they did it. I mean, like I said, they did it for all different reasons. They all may have even if they were into, you know, fundamentalist, they may have all had different, you know, imams and spiritual leaders. They didn't all necessarily follow Osama bin Laden or anything like that. Even like the circumstance with Zacharias Massawi, he's the only living one, supposedly the 20th hijacker, which is nonsense. He could have been 35th, 50th hijacker, you know, according to research I've done, because there was a lot more hijackings. But, you know, you're dealing with someone that was like following more of the Moroccan temple, Moroccan science whole is like Islamic thing, with, you know, they're more interested in like taking over a certain part of Europe. It's a completely different set of beliefs. And it's just, it's the questioning of the network who arranged all these different causes that, you know, they obviously have an overlapping interest. They hate the United States, you know, and they're never attacking Israel, ironically. So that's what the question is. It's like, I mean, yeah, I can give you my opinion on things, but you know, I still have a lot of questions. I don't know everything as far as that goes, but I can tell you that there's something to be said about the Hamburg cell. And there's something to be said about, you know, that the better way to look at the Saudi role is that they're more of the muscle. They're more of the meat. They're not necessarily the real brains of the operation.
They gave logistical support and all that. The NSA would not even share its intelligence on the hub in Yemen with the CIA. And the CIA had to set up its own hub. I think it was in Madagascar or something to try and listen in all these conversations. But they had their phones. What's weird is if you divide up the four planes we know definitely were hijacked, each one seemed to have a ringleader. But there's always this, which one of these doesn't look like the other. So if you're talking about the Hamburg cell, Al Jara never stays with the rest of them. Yeah. And even on the final days when they're going up to New York, when they stop in Maryland, he stays in a different hotel. He's always separated from the rest of the group. They're going to get on the plane. And then of course, this is the guy with relatives that worked for Israeli intelligence as well as a politician in Lebanon, which is just odd that, wow, people spying on Hezbollah are related to a 9/11 pilot, not just a hijacker, but he's supposed to be the pilot. And then when you listen to the airphone, which are not cell phones, airphone conversations, all the witnesses describe three hijackers instead of four. We have the black box of 93 that are not referring to the pilot as Al Jarrah. And in the final moments where they're all screaming praise Allah and all that, his voice isn't on there. It's just the three of them. So was he not even on the final flight? He did find his passport on the ground, so there's that evidence, but that could have been put there. And then we have people around the area, because that it wasn't supposed to go down in that area, right? The passengers took it down. And we have people tied to a front company for Israel going back and forth and lying about their whereabouts, who at least passed by the area. But the Al Jarrah connection is just one. And you can go through all four flights and say, here's the one that is the oddball. But certainly a recruiting message for Al-Qaeda in general to find muscle and get people to hijack planes were exactly what they said it was, putting bases on the Holy Land in Saudi Arabia and the Israeli-Palestine conflict. But I think also the starvation of Iraqis and the attacks in Lebanon. They saw it as an assault on Islam and on Arabs, and they wanted to kill Great Satan, which is the United States. But the smarter, more educated individuals within the cliques seem to have been handled. And you can see even the dopes that Saudi Arabia was given financial and logistical support to Khalid al-Midar and Awad al-Hazmi, for example. And people like Philip Giraldi will come out and say, oh, the Saudis always just help random, Saudi tourists or whatever. Like, they don't speak English. They go on the flight schools. One of them was on Interpol's most wanted list for the coal attack. They'd been spied on. They went to a fucking Al-Qaeda summit meeting in Malaysia. And the CIA knew it. And spent the night with the blind sheikh. And then why hide it? If you didn't know any of that. And then you're going to say, well, we're going to give it to from my wife to this other guy's wife to this guy to that guy. Like going through Osama Basnan and Omar Bayoumi's wife, Marie Duquette, and then Princess Haifa's Bandar Bush's woman. You know, why are you going through all these steps to try and launder the money and hide the money? And then why do you redact it after the fact, right? That was in the 28 consecutive pages that were blanked out. Was it just embarrassing? Like, what's going on here? Oh, and they just happened to go to the mosque of Anwar al-Awlaki.
That's a big problem. That's a big problem right there, the Anwar al-Awlaki.
Yeah, Giraldi's wrong, and I like him. I like Philip Giraldi, but this is not, he just wants to be like, I was a CIA guy. They do this all the time. Like, yeah, they do what's similar to what they do all the time, because that's how you mask it. But then there's so many red flags that are different from this time than just giving money to random Saudis to help them out or whatever. I mean, they didn't just give them money. They bought them a house and lived in it for a month and then lived next to them the rest of the time until they moved to the East Coast. And the CIA refused to inform the FBI the information it had on these people. Hanjar was another one the CIA had information on. He was the pilot for 77, or may have been, at least. He's credited for it. There may have been a sixth guy on that flight. That's sort of a question mark we have. But it's very hard to get to the bottom of it, because it's basically the three of us now. Because everybody that was doing this got turned off by the kook movement and attacked by them so much that they just said, screw it. You know, I'm done. Yeah.
They're not getting any recognition. They're always being blackballed by the crazies. That's that's why. I can see it now. Yeah.
It hurts my other work too, because I'm not just a 9/11 person. I did work on the Iraq War conspiracy, how they lied about WMDs and it was intentional. I went over all the players and stuff in that. I went into Syria. I predicted the gas attacks that were blamed on Assad that were actually from the rebels. I've gone into, of course, the Jeffrey Epstein case and all the. I'm worried that my work on 9/11 is going to undermine all the other work I've done on the Litvinenko affair and all these other things I've uncovered. are going to be discredited because you're like, aren't you a 9/11 guy?
Right.
In fact, that's what Jimmy Dore said to a buddy of mine that met him in person. He's like, I like Ryan, but isn't he a 9/11 guy? I'm like, I'm not one of those 9/11 guys, you know, but that I'm like, I have to tell the truth on September 11th, but it's a topic that I kind of cringe to say. I don't want to call myself a 9/11 truther because I'm so against 99% of what they espouse. And it hurts my other work. Like, I can't get into the Civil War, World War II, or whatever else. They're like, aren't you a 9/11 guy? And that'll follow me around. I'm like, yes, I am. But if you listen to what I have to say about 9/11, it is and has always been unique compared to what you're probably thinking, which is the Jonestown rhetoric. And Alex Jones is a charlatan. I mean, he had Donald Trump on his program talking about the dancing Arabs. And I fucking know that Alex knows that they were Israeli nationals that were celebrating the attacks. And he did not correct him on it and just kept going with the dancing Arab stuff. And he also said that they own Hollywood and all this other bizarre stuff. But then, you know, he's compromised. He ended up marrying his masseuse, his masseuse. Yeah. Can't say that on YouTube. It's a dirty word.
Oh,
it doesn't matter what the context is. Even though you're not condemning an entire group of people, you're saying, well, this one is engaged in ethnic nepotism and is a racist. You can't do that. Only white people can be racist, you see, and only men can be sexist. And we live in the wokerista, you know, the end of history type of land where men can get pregnant. And I mean, it's gotten like, no wonder there was a 9/11 coup movement. I mean, look what was underneath. You know, where you got this stuff where young little girls are getting raped in high schools by men with dicks who are allowed in the women's room because they wear a skirt, and it happens multiple times, and they go and arrest the father and declare the parents domestic terrorists. They blame January 6th on white supremacists. I'm like, what the fuck? I guess because somebody had a Confederate flag. I'm like, the Confederate flag is not about white supremacy. To you, it is, because these people, everything's about white supremacy to these people. You know, a MAGA hat is white supremacy to these people. Barry Weiss called it a white hood. I'm like, really? Half the country? MAGA hat was just someone who supported Trump. That's it. And Donald Trump's not a racist. But they had to, and oh my God, they was laughing. Like, you know who's racist? The people who say voter ID alienates minorities because they're too stupid to find the DMV. And you want to know who did that today? Barack Obama. He said, he got up and said, the Republicans are trying to disenfranchise minorities by demanding voter ID. They're trying to steal the election. Wow. Every country in the world that has elections has voter ID, except us.
Yeah.
And if you don't have voter ID, there's nothing to stop you from voting more than once, especially when you can vote from the mail. All you need is addresses. You can vote over and over again. You have to have ID. You have to have signature verification. And all the states that had that, like Florida had it, they were done counting the night of the election. But you had all these other states, all swing states, by the way, that all went to Biden, still counting votes weeks after the election's over. How the hell does that happen unless you're just gathering addresses from people who didn't vote and putting Biden's name on it, sliding it through the machine? I mean, you're not allowed to discuss it. And it doesn't make you a Trump supporter to point out voter fraud. I mean, fuck Donald Trump. But they did steal that election. And it is something else for them to come out and accuse other people of stealing the election because of voter ID and saying voter ID is racist. What the hell is not racist? Horses are racist. They banned horses because a picture looked like what somebody's Hollywood version of slavery is in their mind. And it was just a guy with horse reins trying to keep migrants from crossing the river. That's it. So they just took away the animal. I mean, they've lost their mind. They freaked out about the Covington kid wearing a hat. They freaked out about that race car driver because there was a string with a loop in it that you could fit maybe two fingers in that they said was a noose. It was like some mulatto race car driver. And they're so like cult-like to yell racism and go on a witch hunt that they don't even look at the details of any of these cases. And 9/11 got like that too, where it was like, when you start talking about the hijackers, they go, oh, pff, hijackers, they're still alive. He's talking about the refusing of the shoot down of Flight 77. They're like, that was no plane. It was a missile or a bomb or a Global Hawk or anything other than Flight 77.
Yeah.
I could just shoot myself in the anus. That's what it feels like talking about 9/11
yourself.
You know, in terms of following up on the conspiracy angle that Ryan talks about, is that's very hypocritical to the truth movement. And I talk about truth movement, I'm not lumping them all in together. I'm specifically talking about the fringe movements, the ones who advertise or promote the fantastical, such as no planes and no hijackers and space beams and whatever, is that their very point about no hijackers is anti-ethical to the very point, because if you did a poll and polled every single no-planer, I can almost tell you from confidence, from my own experience, and probably Ryan and Nelson, I would dare say, agree, all of them blame Israel for 9/11, every single one. But because they don't believe in hijackers, they actually absolve Israel. And I can make this really short and sweet for you. Is that
same thing with Epstein still alive people? They're like, he's living in Israel.
People we're talking about. Right? Yep. So if we go back to abroad, being the hijackers being coming from Germany, it was the German BFV, which is the intelligence services over there, as well as the CIA, who were monitoring these people back in 1996. And if you want to go back, even back to 1992, when the NSA had a wiretap on Bin Laden's satellite phone, which led him to the Yemen hub in 1996, put a tap there, found out about the hijackers in 96, and so on. So when the hijackers came to the United States, the Israelis and Saudis just conveniently started monitoring them as soon as they came here. First with the Saudis out west, Khalid al-Madar and Nawaf al-Hazmi with the Saudi GID, Ryan brought up before, Osama Bastan and Omar Bayoumi. Out east, it was the Hamburg cell, Mohammed Atta, Ziad Jarrah, Mohamed al-Shehi. Who was following them? Israeli moving companies, Irving Moving Systems, Classic International Movers, White Glove Movers, Max Movers, all these companies in Florida, New Jersey, New York, other states. And then you had another Israeli cell, much bigger than that one, which was the DEA, the art student ring. It was over 250 students involved. They were all Israelis, nationals, following, monitoring the FBI and the DEA at the same time. Now,
and protecting their ecstasy trade black market.
Yeah, then you had a drug right. You had a drug ring, right? A Cookie Ogrand and people like that. So all these people are involved. They're interlinked with one another. They may not know one another, but they are assisting one another, helping one another. Now, if you're somebody who proposes that there are no hijackers, well, guess what? You just absolved the CIA, the NSA, the Saudi GID, Israeli Mossad, all from having any type of foreknowledge, let alone complicity. Foreknowledge. Why? Because who were the Israeli moving front companies following? The hijackers. Who were the Saudis following? The
hijackers. Not only following, they moved them around.
Well, I'm just going
to keep
just
adding on to it.
Keeping it simple, right? So now, if you're a no planer, no hijacker, who are we blaming for 9/11? A drone? And as James, you interviewed Jason
Purvis, New World Order, Adam.
A drone hitting the World Trade Center with a pod? Well, there's nobody in it. What are the dancing Israelis celebrating? A drone?
Yeah. What are they filming? I know. That's what Christopher Bolin promotes. He basically saying that the dancing Israelis were filming a fucking drone.
Go ahead. Well, he's making this point, though, that all these people, it's weird, like, okay, this is the same camp as the school shooter deniers and stuff, by the way. But these people that say the most ridiculous shit are like, yeah, and Israel. And the same thing with Jeffrey Epstein, the ones that are saying he's still alive and look at his nose in this photo and all that crap, say he escaped and is living in Israel, thus making the critics of Israel seem like the crazy people. Mm-hmm. Which lets you know where these disinformation stories originated.
Jonestown.
And all they got to do is plant it. You know, they know the Fetzers and they know who the charlatan loudmouths are. All they got to do is whisper in their ear. Or the Alex, they can just give him orders because he's compromised sexually. And he'll go around and spread it. And so you'll see it happening within 24 hours. Bam, Epstein's alive and he's living in Israel. I'm like, shut the fuck up. Because for the last 13 years or something before he died, I had made the connection to Israeli intelligence and how he had given money to Ehud Barak, and he's working out of the Wexner Foundation, which is financed by Henry and Abel Silver and Rabbi Friedman and these people that the precursor to the mega group, which is one that that's the Bronfmans and the Wexners and Steinhardts and people that everyone's familiar with. But above that are the first generation Sunborn Institute that helped Israel steal nuclear weapons from the United States. It is the most giant Israeli intelligence operation in the U.S. and Canada from the inception of the creation of the state, from smuggling arms. This is a huge story that goes all the way back. And this is one of the operatives that was spying on science and technology and using sexual blackmail as a means of moving people around, from hedge funds to senators, governors, presidents, even prime ministers. Tony Blair's in the Black Book, President Clinton's visiting the islands, prominent lawyers. All this is one of the biggest stories involving over a dozen billionaires financing and participating in this, kidnapping children, raping little girls, and blackmailing all these politicians. And it goes back to the Israeli state. I mean, Maxwell's father is a notorious Israeli spy. Long story, yada, yada, yada. When you say he's still alive and he's in Israel, you simultaneously kookify the whole thing and make it look like, ah, those talking about Epstein in Israel rather than the CIA or something. Well, you know what they think. They think they threw a body double in there and blah, 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 blah. It's on purpose. And that's why I'm like, shut the fuck up. It's just like these kooks. And here's another Fed. They went around in a van in Florida with a Palestinian flag. And on the side of the van, it said Hitler was right.
Yeah.
You know, and that's from this guy, Jovi, who's a Fed that is embedded in with this other guy who inherited a bunch of money from his parents. He calls himself Handsome Truth. So he doesn't have a job to be canceled from. They call himself the Goyim Defense League. I'm like, that is all the fucking way down. And that does nothing but, I mean, there is that they run these two fronts. You got the 9/11 kookers, and then you've got like the anti-Semitic crowd. And it's fake anti-Semitism because they just use that as a tool, as another way discrediting researchers and stuff, is just, you know, yell racism, right? That works for the left. And then the kook stuff works for the QAnon type on the right. They fall for it hard. And, you know, these are the same people. They did it to all these movements. They did it to the Tea Party, where they went in and dug in and were like, Obama's a Kenyan and secret Muslim. And yeah, that's the same people. They did it to Occupy Wall Street. They did it to Black Lives Matter. They go in, subvert, hijack, derail, and then that movement's over, you know. And that's what they did to September 11th research. And the few of us that got our necks stuck out there got hammered. I mean, I can't use PayPal, Patreon, AdSense, nothing. And why? Because I admit that all these people died on September 11th and that fire can take down a building, especially if somebody goes in and knocks out the fire suppression systems. And there is some evidence of truck bombs in the parking garages, but you don't need that or not. It's not that important. It's like, whether you follow that or not, there's so much evidence on the from all the other political angles and financial angles that you don't even have to know this very specific number of, like, whether there was a bomb in the basement or not. We do know the fire suppression systems were taken out because the people got arrested, went to jail for it. We know that the fake company that hired them had falsified its fire suppression credentials because those guys got indicted also. And all this quietly happens, mugshots and all, murders the day before the trial, things that should have been major news about 9/11 and think everybody be interested in it. I think they are interested in it, but they don't know that it's there. Like, it's same with Epstein. As soon as the Acosta Trump angle disappeared, that story disappeared from television. But every little nugget of information, everybody's desperately, you know, just on the edge of their seat, ready to hear who else, what happened. Not a word on TV. Why? Well, who do they protect? Who does the liberal media go out of there, do backflips for, to hide the Hunter laptop, for example, which is also full of sex trafficking and hookers and drugs and illegal activities and white collar crime? They called it Russian disinformation. And they got a lot of like Clapper and like a very important people, at least 15 people in the administration to come out and say it's disinformation, as did Twitter and Facebook. And it's not. It is one of his three laptops that he's lost. That is him. He is doing crack and meth and seeing hookers. He is making deals with oligarchs in Ukraine and Russia and Romania. And it's a wealth of information, and it's not on television. Why? Why isn't Epstein on television? And why aren't these the information about the people arrested doing illegal work on fire suppression systems on September 5th to September 10th? They're not. It's that is removed from the 9/11 story, and it forever will be because of the coup movement. And it's you know, I'll see two different types of attacks. There are people who call me a Zionist. Ha ha. Right.
I mean, I've been called that too, by the way. It was so funny.
And I get called a Nazi. I'm like, well, which is it?
Yeah. I get both. I'd never been called a Zionist before until I was saying that planes hit the buildings.
Yeah.
Like a couple weeks ago, they started calling me a Jared and a Zionist. And I was like,
yeah, they'll start calling you promoting Zionist propaganda if you believe there were hijackers. I've seen it happen to Adam too.
Yeah.
And that whole thing is to make it look like this anti-Israel crowd is just full of crazy people. And it undermines, I mean, there's no doubt that there's an illegal occupation and annexation of the West Bank, and they blockade Gaza and they murder kids. We all know what they're doing in Palestine and the Golan Heights and the farms they stole in Lebanon. And Israel preemptively attacks all their neighbors. And they put little kids in prison and they torture people, and they got a black market organ trafficking trade and all this thing. They had sex slavery of brothels from young women from Eastern Europe that get locked up in Tel Aviv and forced into prostitution. This all goes on right in your face. And it'll get attention now and then, like when Tamimi slapped an Israeli soldier and got thrown in jail. They did maybe 3 days of coverage on how all these children are in jail, all these Palestinians get arrested, but not actually. And even that was just internet news. They never talk about the occupation of Palestine. They sure as hell, even though there is a small faction on the left that it's like, woe is me, Palestine, they never talk about the Israeli war role in the war in Iraq or Syria. Right. And whose Air Force has been attacking Syria all year long?
Israel.
How many times on CNN or Fox have you seen Israel attacked the Syrian government, attacked Damascus with fighter jets?
Yeah, never. It's actually, never. We were talking about him the other day. It's Richard Medhurst that I see it from all the time, at least when I had Twitter. You know, now that's gone. So,
But, you're not getting that back.
No, probably not. Nelson, I did want to ask, I mean, I agree with you guys that the structures, like the building structure, that takes up way too much of the attention, but what do you think about the buildings? Do you think there was any sort of explosives or bombs or anything? What's your take on that?
Well, that's a good question, because I was going to bring this up too, because I think we all kind of hear, I don't know about you, Reed, but some of us have a bit of a, would be considered blasphemy as far as what we believe with Building 7. But with the Twin Towers, yeah, I believe there were explosives. I don't think they were on every floor. I believe that there's, you know, the possibility of the truck bombs and stuff like that in the basement. But, you know, I don't believe in the outer columns being rigged. You know, I believe that maybe every 10, 20 floors there may have been, in the center, there could have been explosives. But I don't believe every single 47 columns, you know, had bombs on them and then had cutter charges. I really disagree with the cutter charge theory. I think that's just really ridiculous.
They're surrounded in concrete.
Well, here's the thing. You put cutter charges on there. That's for, like, for safety purposes. You want to contain everything. You don't want to, you know, you don't want to worry about, you know, damaging neighboring structures.
Right.
But this is a terrorist attack. They don't give a fuck about the neighboring structures. So you're not going to put cutter charges. So that's pretty much, you know, what I still believe that the explosive traces with the dancing Israelis and the urban moving systems van, yeah, I think that might have been part of the explosives that may have been used in there or for somewhere else. But Building 7, now, I used to believe was a controlled demolition for a long time. but you know, I always was kind of at odds with it, making a spectacle. Like you had to talk about that first to get the people into 9/11. Mm-hmm. And I thought I had, my problem was very simple, was, but nobody died. Who fucking cares? You know, it's like, you know, you have enough to elaborate and explain with the Twin Towers. Just get to the point. Just talk about the Twin Towers. You know, if you need Building 7 to just some sort of validation, fine. But then, you know, things started happening, you know, fires started happening in other buildings. You know, we have the media, we have, so, you know, social media, we're able to record so many events going on. You know, we've had, I forget which building in South America, it was a tall building, it caught on fire, it fucking completely collapsed. Then you also had the Plaskow building in Iran. Yeah. And then, you know, I started to have problems with that, you know. But then what made me start to change was I started to listen to Danny Jawenko, the demolition expert from Denmark. And he died already, but they AE and all the Regular Truth Movement groups, you know, they always commonly reference this interview that he did on Dutch television. Well, he's from Denmark. And he says that, you know, he thought that the Building 7 was rigged for demolition. But when they do the interview, when they show it on all these, you know, an AE and all these other organizations, they cut the interview. They don't show the whole thing. And Danny Jawenko starts to explain, well, I think they put explosives in the center and they did it in a few hours. He even, you know, the guy that's interviewing shows him a blueprint and he explains, yeah, this, you know, is, I don't know how the environment was around the building after the Twin Towers fell, you know, but, you know, you get enough people in there, you know, you put them in there and you just make sure the center comes down because that's what it seems to look like.
The key word is could.
Could, yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
I believe he's Danish, by the way.
Danish. Yeah, you're right. You know, that it could be done. Now, the important part about this was to me was like, okay, well, wait a minute. I'm having a demolition expert telling me that this building could be rigged up in a few hours, but AE and all these other people tell me it would have took 2 or 3 months, and that the Twin Towers would have took 6 months or even a year to rig up. I'm like, wait a minute, somebody doesn't have a good estimation here, you know? So for a while, I was very quiet about it. My theory for a while was what I called the Jawenko theory. I thought perhaps maybe they put explosives afterwards because it was so damaged. I thought, well, that would probably go with the Larry Silverstein thing with pull it, you know. You know, you have all these warning signs. They did close off all the streets. There's, you know. So I thought, you know, this might make sense.
Silverstein's talking to the fire chief, so why is he telling the fire chief to pull it? He means to pull out and watch it burn.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But that's true. That's what I realize now. But I had an interesting conversation with
David. But it was hard to get that info because it had all been clipped. And you know, with Building 7, they show fires on the 22nd floor on the north side of the building at 9 something in the morning.
Yeah, they cherry pick everything.
And don't show you the other side of the building 7 hours later, which is completely on fire and missing a corner. So if you're missing that information, it's like, well, it does fall down in a few seconds, and that does look very suspicious. And they did announce it falling before it fell on several different channels.
Yeah.
So that is something that does need to be addressed and explained. Mm-hmm. But they cherry picked all this information. Now, it's also funny too that they're saying this is one you have to focus on. They go in reverse order because the most important flight is 93 and then 77, and then the ones in New York. The least important thing is Building 7. It fell down, not a single fireman there was surprised. They're all like, that's next, that one's gone, that's going. Everyone believed that it wasn't going to survive, who was there. All the firemen that survived, oh, this building is next. They didn't even try to put it out. They're like, this is FUBAR, you know?
Yeah.
But you couldn't go and talk to these firemen because the kooks went and got to them first, same as they did with the cops that had arrested the Israelis. And was like, it was bombs, isn't it? Wasn't it? Say it. And these people did the same thing with witnesses that saw the plane hit the Pentagon. They're like, but could it have been this? Could it have been this? Followed them to their house and stuff and just for hours harassing these people. So we're like, I don't care. I don't want to talk about it. I'm not talking about 9/11. So when I tried to interview firemen and stuff, they're thinking I'm one of these assholes. And I'm like, I promise you, I'm not going to. That's not my angle here. It was very hard to get anyone to talk about 9/11 because these people, the Ripofskis and stuff, the professional hecklers, go around and just fucking harass these people endlessly so that you're basically cutting off eyewitnesses to September 11th. That poor woman, Maria Septinrelli, she was in a film. She's only one of the witnesses of the celebrating Israelis, by the way, which David Sheen and others like, it doesn't all rely on her testimony. No, it doesn't, dude. That's just the one you saw on a film on YouTube. It does not rely just on her testimony. Multiple witnesses had seen either them or the vans parked there and saw them celebrating, plus their own photos from the cameras arrested after the fact. Should put some there, but again, more missing information. Art students right across from Doric Towers, by the way, set of girls. They want you to focus on what's the least important and the most kooky, and they want you to never talk about the things that are the most condemning, which is 93 and 77.
Yep.
And AE 9/11, to get that right, say it take a year to rig it. Come on. These are the people that think a plane had to smash through six reinforced walls of the Pentagon because of an aerial view. It looks like the rings, which are only on the top floors, by the way, extend all the way to the ground. I'm like, really? You think people on the bottom floor are going inside, outside every time they go to an office? The Pentagon is shaped like a king's crown, two basement levels and five floors. The bottom two floors don't have rings. It's just sheetrock. They have ramps that go up to the upper floors. They don't have stairs. They could not even get the architecture of the building correct. So how can your opinion about the architecture be correct when you didn't even look at a single blueprint? They just looked at some photos online of the rings from above and go, oh, you couldn't do that.
Yeah. Yeah, he shouldn't have been on that National Geographic special, because that's the whole thing. He got like, you know, like, why is Richard Gage even in, you know, there? It's like, it's AE. It's, you're only supposed to be on the buildings. Why are you even... why are you being brought in to cover the Pentagon at all? Yeah. You know, but the thing I was saying about Building 7 was, you know, I got into an interview. I've gotten into a discussion actually with Richard Gage's former second man in charge, David Schlesinger. They booted him out of the organization years ago. Mm. But you know, I told him that, you know, my theory on Building 7 has changed. That I, you know, that I believe in the Danny Jowenko theory. And he, you know, decided to have a Skype conversation with me, and I started to explain reason why. And, you know, and I brought up one person in mind. I'm like, well, you know, if it is, then why don't you guys ever talk about Jerome Hauer? You know, mm-hmm. And like, Jerome Hauer's linked to all these, you know, to the anthrax company. He supposedly he told the White Cipro. House to get on Cipro. You know, so, you know, he works for what security company? Kroll. You know, he's right. The head of the office of emergency management. You know, his offices were in the, you know, basically in Building 7. And I go, why aren't out of everyone else, why don't you guys ever put this guy Building 7 suspect? And basically Schlesinger told me that, well, I'd actually had met Jerome Hauer, and he got to basically ask him two questions, one of them being about the Cipro warning, and he said, no, it was utter bullshit. But he asked him, well, what do you think, you know, do you still think that there were no explosives in the Twin Towers? He says, yes. So what do you think happened with Building 7? He says, well, that I don't know, because that does look like a controlled demolition. So I thought to myself, wait a minute.
He lied about all of it.
Yeah, here's the best part. Wait a minute. If this
Michael Moore is the one that dug up the Cipro thing and told everybody in his 9/11 movie.
Yeah. But I'm like, if this guy can believe it's a demolition, anybody can. Because the most important thing about Jerome Hauer, which has always been pointed out, is that he's the first city official that appears on all the news networks saying that, yeah, that the fires alone and the plane crashes brought down the Twin Towers. Mm. You know, it's basically the truth movement's whole focus is arguing the 9/11 Commission report only over that. And here's the guy that basically goes and says that, besides Bernard Carrick, who says it a few hours later, because he's the second city official. That's who it is. You have Jerome Howard, then you have Carrick.
He was on his vacation to Israel 2 weeks prior.
Yeah, month before, yeah.
Got a quarter million dollar loan wired through Steve Witkoff from Ertain Wertheimer, the richest billionaire in Israel. And the Jewish agency sends over Paul Kirsberg and the rest of these people that are celebrating. And he got thrown in jail for fraud. And he worked with the Gambino crime syndicate and at Genovese. And Giuliani has him answer all the hard questions because he's not opening his mouth. Right. He lets Carrick take the fall for it all. But Carrick's wife, too. Carrick is just such a deplorable character with all these Israeli ties to the mafia in New York, too. And scamming people in windows and stuff. And it's like, yeah, they're not interested because you have to know stuff. You'd have to know some things about organized crime. You'd have to know what, you know, who he visited, who's giving him money. The guy that ultimately loaned him all that money sits on the board of governors of the JA, and the JA is the one that sent the people for Dominic Suter's outfit there. Some of the people working at Urban Movings were there to actually do the moving. Someone has to do the work. So that's where they hired the Russians and Hungarians for. But the Hebrew speaking crowd, they didn't work. They have meetings only with themselves allowed. The others are excluded, speaking in Hebrew. Always talking trash on America. And some of the things they said, which I can't say on YouTube, but about what they do with media and stuff is, protocol level alarming. And, you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, you get caught one van with traces of explosives, another one packed with explosives. Everybody fails their polygraph test. Everybody has different bullshit tale of their timeline that's different from one another. There's so much damning evidence in their interrogations, and it's like, whatever. As Suter just flees the country, so does his wife. And when someone like Raimondo writes about it and says, hey, he's on the 9/11 terrorist suspect list right here next to bin Laden and these people, what do? The FBI investigates antiwar.com for sharing truthful information about Dominic Suter.
Yeah.
How did he know? And Raimondo is just quoting stuff because these morons did not censor the 9/11 suspect list that had been translated into other languages. So he had an Italian one. I got the Spanish one from Argentina, and the names are the same. A name is a name, you know. And it was on Cryptomy, which was like before WikiLeaks. It was the WikiLeaks. I still think Cryptomy is a good source.
Yeah.
And it had been published and it had been online. And so they go and investigate antiwar.com and start scaring away their donors. They bump them off Google search, you know, and Raimondo was all over this. And I talked to him in person about 9/11 because I figured he wrote this book, 9/11 Terror Enigma. And he talked about what had been known without the FOIAs up until that time. Well, I had done the FOIAs. So I filled him in with all that. This is months before he died, unfortunately. So I don't know what, I mean, his eyes got like that big. I was like, this is what, I mean, you were right, dude. And like, you were on this. And here's what we know now about Suter and the rest of them. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us. And I would love to have seen what Raimondo could have done about the election, about Epstein being arrested, all this, the border crisis, all these things. He was the best. He was antiwar.com, in my opinion. I mean, he was the thing. Oh, he's not. That's an exaggeration. He's the backbone, though. Like, three times a week, I go and read his articles, and he was writing for Tacky. He's the one that flipped Ann Coulter. I mean, she used to be insufferable. Now she's only slightly insufferable because of her mom. Like, well, that's the joke I made on Four Horsemen one time when Ann Coulter and, like, Carlson are the voices of reason. That's dark times, right? When libertarians are hoping Larry Elder might win California, that's dark times. Because look at the alternatives.
Because
it won't. Because it won't. That's an answer from a press secretary now. Is that going to add to the debt? No, it won't. Why? Because it won't. Okay. Are we in preschool now? They're moving kids, 37,000 migrant children without adults to New York in the middle of the night. And her response is, it wasn't the middle of the night, early morning. Next question. Unreal. There's just no, there's no coverage of the coverage either. So you wonder why, if you want to know how anybody could get, who could get away with a crime of that magnitude, there is only one group that I can think of that can censor the media like that. That just, the name escapes me.
So, Adam, I was wondering about with the Pentagon, with Cheney, you know, not shooting down Flight 77. Do you think that was incompetence? Do you think that was intentional? And then a lot of people wonder about how the plane hit the part of the building that was being renovated. Do you think that's just random chance, or do you think that that was planned, or just what do you think about that?
Wow, what a question. We'd have to go backwards to go forward. So my theory is something that isn't based on speculations, the public record. I think that the 9/11 attacks were known to the intelligence apparatus, especially to the NSA, because they had a tap on not just bin Laden's satellite phone at this point, but also to the house in Yemen. Not to mention, you had the Amdocs investigation where Israelis were actually listening into the phone calls of the DEA, FBI. So put this all together now with the Saudis financially giving aid to some of the hijackers.
Converse InfoSeek.
Yeah, if you're exactly right. If you're the
Converse
NSA,
is spying on my personal computer, by the way.
Right. If you're the NSA and you want to relay information to the higher ups at the State Department to make preparations for a 9/11 to be allowed to happen, well, you would just need the air defenses to be on exercises without hot guns. And what I mean by that is that without the air defense doesn't have weapons. And they would
we exercises. Know all about what hot guns and cold guns mean right now with what happened in the news lately.
So. And on top of that,
oh, something happened in Hollywood.
Sorry to throw it off there, Adam.
A number of exercises that day, you know, Vigilant Guard and Global Guardian, Amalgam Verbal 1 and 2.
9/11.
So with all this, all the air defense away from the East Coast, the hijackings take place. They go unabated. And there's a naval aide that comes. This is the story. The naval aide comes into the Presidential Emergency Operations Center, the PEOC, and he goes into and he sees Dick Cheney on the phone. Now, the naval aide is John Cochran, Douglas Cochran. That's his name. Douglas Cochran. He comes in. He goes, sir, the plane is 50 miles out. And he gets no response. It all goes all the way down to, sir, the plane is 10 miles out. Did the order still stand? And King just whips around, he whips his neck, he goes, of course the order still stand. Have you heard anything to the contrary? Well, it's not a shoot down order because there is no planes with any weapons in the sky. That's a stand down order. You know, that's to let the plane come, because it wasn't an act of war when the plane hit the World Trade Center, but it was an act of war when the plane hit the Pentagon, because immediately after the plane hit the Pentagon, Secretary of the Defense Donald Rumsfeld said on Meet the Press that when that happened, it was an act of war. Well, you would think it would be an act of war when the planes crashed into the World Trade Center, but no, only to the center of all military headquarters at the Pentagon. Do I think it was on purpose? Sure, absolutely. Can I prove it? Well, I can make a good argument. Proving it would be a little bit difficult, but not impossible.
Well, he lied about where he was and which plane he was talking about.
Well, sure. And at that time,
lying about your timeline, right?
Right. And he's not the only one, too. I mean, Donald Rumsfeld is not where he needs to be, which is at the Presidential Emergency Operations Command or at his desk, because now he's out of the script. He's outside helping people. Now, why is he doing that? So now who's running the country's defenses? Nobody. And at the time when you need it in this existential crisis of, you know, they don't know how many planes are being hijacked, allegedly. They don't know where they're going to be crashed to. So you would think that he needs to be where he's at in order to coordinate the national defenses. Well, it wouldn't have mattered anyway, because according to Major General Arnold, Larry Arnold, he basically says at the 9/11 Commission that none of the planes would have interfered with the hijackers anyway, because one, they need the authorization for the shoot down, and two, none of them got back to their bases and loaded up with guns until all the exercises were completed. That's not speculation. That's for the public record. He actually said that. And he also said that with Ralph Eberhardt, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Richard Myers as well, that all the planes in the sky, the national defenses, were without weapons. In fact, Flight 93, according to Heather Penny of the Air National Guard, said that she was actually going to crash into the plane and then parachute out of her plane. She was actually
right before she'd hit 93, right before she bludgeoned.
Yeah. Right, that's right. So, yeah, do I think, Reed, that they allowed the attacks to happen? Damn right. Because what came after 9/11? Much worse than 9/11 itself.
Yeah. January so, Nelson, where do you think Flight 93 was going?
Like when it turned around, I mean, some people had tried to even say when it was going to hit Building 7, which is really silly because it wouldn't have been able to hit it because of the trajectory. And the official story says it was going to hit the Capitol. And there was even some speculation even on the day of that it was going to go hit Camp David. But my opinion is I think it was going to hit the CIA headquarters because that is where they've been wanting to strike. That's always been a primary target. But before they turned around, because they did take over the plane and then it still was going in the west direction for quite a while, depending on if there was communication, because I think there still was some sort of central command control, of as far as coordination, because like I promote that there was more hijacking. So, there's going to be technicalities and problems. So you want to be able to coordinate things, especially if you got the Twin Towers as your main, the main targets you want to hit first. You want to make sure everything's going to go there if you're going to launch five planes from Logan Airport, which is what they were going to do, which is what was part of the plan. So my point with Flight 93 is that I think they were initially going to go to Sears Tower. They were going to go to Chicago. But then when the other flights, once the FAA put the no-fly ban, they turned around and, had to strike somewhere near D.C. because that's where they wanted to concentrate their the main targets at, New York and D.C. But
they had announced to the plane that we're going back to New York, so the passengers would have noticed if they took a sudden turn south, but maybe they did, and that's why they took it out. But they may have been doubling up on the World Trade Center. They didn't know whether those were going to fall or not, so they could have hit it again with another plane. We won't know, but they said themselves we're going back to New York. And so a lot of passengers, up until that time, most hijackings were, we're going to land the plane and hostage negotiate, right? Sure. So they didn't know they're going to be crashing a building. Well, they had gotten word to air phones or what have you that, no, they're running them into landmarks. And so they decided to charge the cockpit. But it would have kept them quiet if they thought, oh, we're going back to New York and we're going to land in New York. They must have been going there. Now, as Nelson said, they could have pulled an audible if they had gotten wind that, no, you're not going to make it that far, whatever, and try to hit something around you. But they had said themselves. But what's interesting is all the mass media said it was going to hit the White House. And there's no evidence said by anybody in Al-Qaeda otherwise saying they were going to hit the White House. It's just everybody said that. They go, the fourth one was going to hit the White House. Well, how do you know where the fourth one was going? It was going northeast. It was in Pennsylvania and had been going northeast since it turned around. They said they're going back to New York. That's where they were headed. It just sort of dipped like that for a second. Like they're like, okay, let's try to hit Virginia. But it may have been doubling up on the Pentagon. It may have been doubling up on the World Trade Centers because they didn't know for sure that the fires were going to take the buildings out or not. But one more would definitely seal the deal. They also didn't know how many of their other attempted hijackings had not taken place or not, because there were more than the four planes in the plan.
I can tell you also this, the second phone call from passenger Peter Hansen on flight 175, many minutes before it struck the South Tower, he had said to his father that the hijacker, they said they took an over, but he says it sounds like they're talking about crashing it into a building in Chicago. They were talking about Chicago and then hitting a building there.
And so, Sears had been cased. They had cased the area for Sears Tower.
We know that.
And I mean, they even cased the Mexican Parliament, but they had cased the Sears Tower, and they had cased the Sears Tower back in 93 too, didn't they?
Yeah. It was always been a target. It will remain a target, unfortunately.
In the Holland Tunnel, but you don't need a plane to hit a tunnel.
That's right. The original operation for 9/11, if we believe the official narrative coming out of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and I take this with a grain of salt because he was tortured, but if we believe the original plot was for hijacking of 10 planes and to have them crash all over the United States, including the Sears Tower, Golden Gate Bridge, one was a nuclear facility, and the last plane was going to be piloted by somebody, and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was going to kill all the men, leave all the women and children, land that plane, and then give a press briefing. And Bin Laden said it'd be too much. However, it doesn't explain to the other hijackings as well. Now, I'm not talking about this being an Al-Qaeda operation. I had this conversation with Nelson before about the extra hijackings. They don't necessarily have to be Al-Qaeda. They could be operatives coming from who knows where, the intelligence committee, someone from abroad, domestic organizations, what have you. Doesn't matter. We do know that there was going to be a potential larger operation involving 9/11, which was going to hit the intercontinental United States. And this is something that was brought up with Nelson in his film, Pachinko Maximum, about 9/11 being a two-pronged attack. That's not coming from speculation. That's coming from prima facie evidence. Also from the testimony of the alleged 20th hijacker, Zachariah Moussaoui, who said at his own trial that he was selected to be part of the second wave of attacks. Now, when was that second wave going to happen? It was going to happen either on 9/11 or on the days when the airlift ban was going to be lifted. That's September 13th, 14th. But we do know that there was going to be extra hijackings. Who were these people? And why were these people deported immediately? That's another
question. There was an attempted attack on a nuclear facility, and there was at least one independent attack. You just reminded me when you're talking about where it was like a teenager crashed into a Bank of America building, but it was like a little crop duster thing and nothing. But that there was like inspired copycat attacks where people stole planes and crashed them into banks. What the kid didn't understand is a crop duster isn't going to do anything to a bank building. But it was scary. Like, I mean, if you were in that window, he could have got you. But it inspired some things from independence. But there's definitely a plan on 9/13/14 that partly did go through, and people did get arrested and majority of them released mysteriously. And that was covered. It was televised news. Was it flight 233? I don't remember the numbers, but
no. They're phantoms.
Okay,
that's what Jason. That's what Burma said. They're phantoms
out of a dude weapon. Like,
yeah. They're not part of the official story.
The three of us have forgotten. We've forgotten more about 9/11 than these people know.
Yeah.
But Nelson's got films. I've got films. And as far as your Cheney question, if people will rent and watch The Empire Unmasked, I went over and I read Clark's book. I went through all the info possible on the timeline of everybody's account and their tenant, Rice, so on, about who got in when at what time. Norman Mineta's testimony, the transportation secretary. Remember when we used to have those? Now they go on vacation in the middle of a supply chain crisis. Mm. I'm glad I live in Japan because I'll be going nuts over there. I'll be like, why are you doing this? I got to bounce in, gentlemen.
All right.
Got back from preschool, so.
Okay.
But, right. Yeah, Empire Unmasked, watch Nelson's films. Are they still available on?
I'm still up there. I've had to weed out certain things out of my channel, but I'm still there.
Well, I would back that up on BitChute or something.
I have a BitChute too. I have that too.
And Adam's interview with Reed earlier was great. He failed to understand that he was acting like an adult on your channel. So now he knows to not be so serious now. It's sad. Like I got accused of being like Ben Stein monotone, just blah, 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 facts guy. And I've really tried to tell some jokes and sarcasm to spice it up because it is hard to listen to, I guess. But that's not my style.
That's why we have Eric on here usually.
Yeah.
I'll do Jesse Ventura, but Ryan, I don't care what you think you saw. I saw those planes hit the buildings and those buildings exploded into powder, Ryan. That's about all I
can say. Say 5G.
You can take that to the bank. 5G.
You know, I get a lot of flack for people saying, well, you know, you're too serious or too deadpanned and whatnot.
They're like, where's the Luciferians?
I'll tell you the reason why. It's simple. It's because 9/11 has been made into a comedy, I fear. It's unfortunate because we're trying to get, you know, the prime face evidence out to people so they can learn with Ryan's films and Nelson's films. And, you know, we get people like Jason Burmes, unfortunately, you know, talk about phantom planes and pods and whatnot. And don't talk about the real political
in 2021.
I can't understand it. You know, 20 years, and we can't get past the basics of 9/11 to talk about the deeper geopolitical angles involving foreign policy and the intelligence apparatuses, because we can't even get past out of ground zero and the planes themselves. And this is the reason why major truth groups, such as Architects and Engineers, Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry, Truth Data Project, 20 years, the best Architects and Engineers could do was a comic book this year. A comic book.
Oh, my God. Okay? It's so sad.
I went down the ground zero this year. I went
20 years. 20 years is still arguing whether or not there were airplanes.
It's a shame. And here we are.
We are so deep in our own end zone. I mean...
I would tell this to Nelson too, Ryan, is that we're like light years ahead of these people because it's not, look, I'm not patting myself on the back here. I'm nobody. You know, I'm just an average person. I tend to read more than the average person. That's all. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to share information to the public that they could use so that we could go to court. I don't care about belief.
Well, I mean, admitting airplanes is not some genius thing.
Right. You know?
It's not like, oh, I'm so smart. I just, there's plane. There's a plane size hole, debris from a plane. There's footage of planes, you know, but we can't even reach that point. There are the half planers that don't think, they think 93 was blown out of the sky and that I don't know what they think happened to flight 77, but they think a missile at the Pentagon. And some of them even are like, yeah, not even the World Trade Centers. They think it was holograms or whatever.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and then they're like, but it's Israel, right?
They don't know how. Come on. They don't know where the swap over was or nothing. I mean,
we haven't got that detail yet, but let's just admit.
Well, they even get that wrong. They talk about the arch
dude. Dude, and fucking Burmes is in the center of this shit. Like, Jones has dropped it, right?
Right, no, you're
a lot
right,
of the people. Fester got sued over his school shooting denial hoax and crap, which, yeah, fuck that guy. But Burmes is still making a living off of promoting Loose Change. And he's an Epstein retard, too. He promotes all the dumbest stuff on that, too. I'm like, are you paid or are you that dumb?
How can you
land on the wrong side of everything every time? He's worse than Eric Stryker. I mean, if you want to be right on something, just see what that guy says. Do the opposite. Or Dershowitz, whatever. Just with the opposite of whatever he said. And you'd be right almost every time.
it seems like. I mean, when he was talking to Reed, I mean, you know, he was bringing up PSA 1771, and he was doing a great job, like, you know, articulating and trying to explain it. But then he kind of kept interrupting him with barely what he knew about it. But then when Reed was kind of giving him more detail, he just, well, I haven't done much research on it. Well, why the fuck are you talking about it, man?
There's more gaps in that theory than between his teeth.
And he already picked little things like, well, I'm already skeptical of this. I'm like, well, wait a minute. Why?
Well, they found a bandana. They
haven't researched it.
They found a bandana. That debunks all, right? Mm. There was mail and letters and paper things, passports and otherwise, that do survive. I've lived on Hatteras Island. I've seen hurricanes rip the roof off a house and flood everything, and yet there's like a toothbrush sitting on the sink.
Mm-hmm.
There's some weird crap happens like that sometimes.
Well, if you can't discern how a human body can't survive a plane going 560 miles an hour, fully loaded with 13,000 pounds of fuel into a hard surface, rather than a bandana surviving, Well, it's all about metaphysics for you, because it's not, I mean, it's basic metaphysics too. And we show, me and myself and Nelson, we tried to get in contact with Jason Burbage to show him that there were deliberate plane crashes similar to Shanksville. I brought up German Wings 9525. Nelson brought up PSA 1771. He actually blocked Nelson and called me a troll. And so I said, okay, then we, I already know what he's about. So
he was supposed to be on a Epstein roundtable. So was Whitney Webb, and both of them ducked out. I was like, I fucking called that one. Neither was with Titus Frost. I came on, they didn't show up, and I didn't even care about her. I wanted to tell him, tell your fucking audience that an airplane hit the Pentagon. I wasn't even going to talk about Epstein until he did that.
Well, it's my plan. He didn't show up. It's my plan to get you guys both on. I know you don't think he'll show
100%. He will not do it.
I can do everything I can to get him on here. So
I'll bet the farm he will not do that. He's not going to do that. Oh yeah, maybe sometime in the future. He'll run. He knows he's fucking full of shit, but he's got a cult following, and that's how he earns a living.
Hey, but I got him to have a conversation about, I got him in a conversation where I was able to confront him about a plane being vaporized when it hit the ground, where no one else was able to do that. So you never know. I might be able to get him.
He didn't see you coming. Like, he knows who I am and what I'm going to say.
So I said ahead of time, I said in the messages to him, I said, hey, I'm really good friends with Ryan Dawson. And, you know, I pretty much buy what he says on 9/11. So I want to talk about flight 77 and flight 93. I told him that before the interview. I didn't surprise him with that. So I don't know. Never know. Well,
we have tried all of these assholes to get in dialogue or debate, and all they do is ban you, you know, and if they can't ban you out of their little group, they'll get you banned off the entire platform.
Well, I don't think he would debate you, Ryan Dawson, on the basis of that fact that if he asked to come to the conclusion that Flight 77 crashed at the Pentagon and 93 in Shanksville, he would lose 3/4 of his followers, because that's who he makes his money from.
I don't think it would even be a debate. It'd just be me explaining stuff to an idiot. It'd be like Dorsey or any of my other 9/11 debates where I'm just like, there's a whole bunch of shit that you don't know. I haven't researched that. The questions I could ask him, like, I haven't looked into that. I haven't looked into that. I haven't looked into that. Like, you haven't looked into any of this. It's just like the Kennedy people that are obsessed with physics. They're like, magic bullet. How many shots could Oswald or whoever shoot from this window in this amount of time? I'm like, oh, my God. That doesn't matter. that the evidence of why both Kennedys got killed is so clear, and we know who did it and why. And all these people focusing on that kind of physics crap of, like, a bullet turning in the air, that it's charlatans. And so that's the only thing I can compare 9/11 to in the degree of just kook fuckery is JFK. That's another one that if you start talking about, you will run in. And it's the same people. Jim Fetzer, like, blames it on his wife or the driver, William Greer. Exactly. All this stuff. It's from the same crowd. They're like professional charlatans.
Mm-hmm. What about Sandy Hook?
That's the worst.
That's the worst, but that's like, I feel like their propaganda is too far out in right field that it's not as damaging as the stuff they say about JFK is at least like physically possible. So it's not as far out there, but I concede that one's that's a good one. Sandy Hook, where they're just like, well, and you know who, it was Alex Jones promoting that filth too. And then he denied it. He's like, well, I just want to say all these questions from both sides. Like, you did not, dude. You said they faked the event to take our guns. That's what you said for years. And then he got in trouble. And then he started seeing lawsuits coming about. Then, finally, he drops it and says it was a real thing. He's like, okay, people really died at Sandy Hook. I was like, wow, congratulations, you fucking graduated. Like, what do you think? They faked the deaths of all these kids and everybody in town went along with it forever? Even their brothers and sisters, they still have to go to school and stuff, but the other one's just like living in the basement in the house for the rest of their life or something. Oh my God. And they made so much fun of that poor father because he just met the president and he tried to put on a smile for the camera. And like, he's an actor. You know who was an actor? The guy that parked his truck in front of the Capitol building a few months ago this from North Carolina that said he had a bomb. Mm-hmm. It was cute. Yeah, that whole thing was staged.
Notice no one talked about that even like 2 days after it happened. It was just,
oh yeah, where are all the people saying this is fake and staged? They kept quiet on that one because that was fake and staged.
Yeah. Right.
I didn't even hear about that. I'll have to look that up.
See? That's just my point.
That's similar to the Harley guy at the World Trade.
So good.
That's they claimed that guy was an act crisis actor too. The Harley guy.
Oh, he's the original one besides everyone else.
Yeah, he's the right.
Yeah, yeah, it's hilarious for Burmese to say, like, you know, I'm not a Sandy Hooker, you know, and Dylan Avery did the same thing too. But you're the motherfuckers that started the whole crisis acting stuff.
Dylan Avery was on with Abby Martin.
Yeah,
and he started complaining about the like new generation of kooks.
Yeah.
I played that song, How Does It Feel? And they had the commercial where the dad walks in on his kid doing drugs. He's like, where did you get this? Where'd you learn this? He's like, I learned it from you, all right. And it's like, dude, he's like, he's complaining about these kooks to Abby, and they're both just sitting there dumbfounded, like, whoa, why are they talking about do weapons? That's ridiculous. I'm like, he learned it from you. You're the original fucking kook. You're the OG QAnon, Loose Chains. Yes. That's you. That is you. Abby isn't aware of that. I mean, she's a girl, but fucking Dylan Avery, man. He's just as stupid as Burmese. He'll be like, well, we were kids. We got some stuff wrong. I'm like, no, you got everything wrong except the date. And apparently I unwittingly may have Israeled that from Scott Horton. I don't know. I've been saying it a long time, but maybe he did, but they got everything wrong except the date.
Yeah.
And then it didn't even talk about anthrax. And the worst thing is they threw up PNEC, I think, in the second one or something. And they're like, you know, Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, because they're signatories to PNAC. They didn't write any of the papers.
They didn't mention Richard Pearl and Douglas Fight.
No, they didn't talk about the OSP or any of that stuff.
No, but then again, they would have to.
You'd have to know things,
right? I try to be a little bit liberal, but yeah, you would have to do some reading and education on the subject, in which. You would think that by the third revision, they get it right, and they didn't. And I think that's highly obtuse on Burmese's part to come recently after the 20th anniversary and still propagate pods on plant. I was
well, Reed exposed them because you think, my God, you don't still believe this, do you? Like, you just made some mistakes when you were young. No, he's a full-on fucking... I was going to say Kool-Aid drinker, but it wasn't Kool-Aid at Jonestown, was it?
He actually thinks Flavor-Aid. Now, this is what got me, because he actually says that the planes were hijacked, but then they were somehow swapped, but he doesn't give evidence for that. He just goes right to the swap. Yeah, and I want to know...
Just swap them.
Right. I want to know how that's possible. How did the FAA, how did the National Transportation Safety Board, how did all these agencies get fooled?
After he found the final time stone gem in the Gauntlet of Infinity or whatever... I mean, this is the level I'm talking about. You know, I'm still trying to get people educated on how evil Lincoln was or some of the historical basic American history is just it's gone. It's all just identity politics. Everybody's a racist. Da, 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 da. They don't care. They're tearing down statues of Thomas Jefferson now. They're letting men in women's bathrooms. They're got an open border that's not tested for COVID, but everyone else has to be. They're moving kids around in the dead of the night. The empire is falling apart. Gas was up to $7 in parts of California. You got empty shelves. They're warning people, go get your stuff before Christmas because there might be nothing there to buy. I mean, I hope people have buyer's remorse on... Oh, wait, they didn't actually vote for him. Never mind. But the ones that did vote for Biden or against Trump, I hope you get what you deserve. You know, I mean, the guy has gotten nothing right. The best thing he ever did was in the war in Afghanistan. And that's what they criticize him about the most. He did it in the most fucked up backward way possible because he's a moron. But, you know, the generals did that. And they're the same people that lied to Trump about Syria. He wanted to get troops out of Syria. So they just lied to him about the numbers. Yeah, we're down to 100. Pfft, don't tell him the truth. That is treason. Fauci caught in the National Institute of Health said, yeah, he did do gain of function through Echo Health to the Wuhan labs and sat there and lied to Congress about it. But he's like, no, they didn't get any gain of function from our group. They got it from the group that we gave money to. We used an intermediary, you see, so that makes it okay.
No, oh, it right. doesn't. We drew a parallel with that when I had Adam on last time. Was the kook guys? You know, they a lot of there's a lot of kook stuff with COVID too. Like it doesn't exist. It's all a hoax.
Oh yeah, exactly. The virus deniers and all that. That's it's what
like,
they do.
They still want Fauci in prison, but it's like, wait, for what?
Yeah, like, he designed a virus in Wuhan, but viruses don't exist. Yeah. Well, they do that on 9/11 too. They'll say a plane or a missile hit the Pentagon, and then they'll say there's this giant flight path doing loops around DC of the airplane, and there's a shoot down order that they refuse to do. I mean, like, of what? A missile doing circles around Virginia? I mean, come on.
Yeah. Oh, by the way,
that's right next to 495, 395. I think there's always cars on there. They would have seen something. Everyone sees a plane go to the Pentagon. No one sees it fly away from the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. Maybe it hit the Pentagon. But I feel dumb even having to argue these things. You know what I mean? Like, but you do, because it is the majority of 9/11 people are like, well, isn't that? And oh man, and it's the same group that goes around with the virus deniers, the, you know, Obama's a secret Muslim people, the school shooter denier stuff, the all the it's the same crowd.
False flag.
Geo. Yeah, and yet they're always so anti-Israel.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to tell you, Ryan, before you run, I went to the Tom Woods 2000 event last weekend.
Oh, how was that? That must have been badass.
It was great. And I was a mini celebrity there. Only when I go to libertarian events, the rest of the time I'm not. But I probably had like 300 people want to take a picture or talk to me or whatever.
Wow.
But at least 50 of them told me, you introduced me to Ryan Dawson and you changed my life. Like that was, I mean, that's no exaggeration. They were
imagine
like,
what would have happened if I had just been allowed on stuff.
I know. Yeah.
I am so happy that Tom Woods has been red pilled on the Civil War, because he used to have really dumb takes on that. And I think it was Brian McClanahan and others that got to him. And it's just like, oh, so good. So
have you,
good. Because we
have you
need
ever
him.
Talked to them before or no?
I actually was going to interview Tom, and he's got like 20 kids or something. I think he has like six for real though. And
I don't even know.
With the time zones in Japan, I was working for Zabel Edmonds. It's the only time I spoke to him in email. We were going to set up a show, and then he just couldn't do it with all his children and stuff. And that was it. So,
yeah.
Never spoken to him since. I don't even know if he remembers who I was, but, I still listen to his show sometimes, and it was really good to hear him come around on the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, please, I'm like, this is who you need on. I was like, he read Charles Adams' book and stuff. And then that's the problem. I'm not going to go on a Civil War rant, I promise, even though I have all this behind me.
Well, it's not a four horseman if we don't talk about Kyle Rittenhouse.
We got to rip on Lincoln. 11, okay. So they allow all the Lincolnite bullshit on YouTube, and they don't allow the counterpoints. And so there's this checkmate Lincolnite guy. He is the second worst. The worst is the PragerU, General Sly, whatever that. Sydney something. Ugh, that's the dumbest Civil War take I've ever seen. Is the PragerU one. The second worst is the checkmate Lincolnite guy, because you can tell that he knows better. Because some of the stuff he brings up that he cherry picked, like, there's no way you found that without seeing A, B, C, D, and E that you're admitting. You're doing this on purpose. But that blaming the war, whole war on slavery and all that, because it fits the whole modern, you know, wokeism narrative on everything, will get you promoted on YouTube. I mean, you'll get millions of views for that kind of rhetoric. When you make the counterpoint, or if you even just have a battle flag or anything like that, they'll censor you. Fortunately, they're so ignorant, they don't know who that is. They don't know who that is. They don't know who that is. But if I had a battle flag, they know what that is. They're like, oh my God, that's a racist. So, yeah, fuck them. But I'm going to do a woodshed of the checkmate Lincolnite guy and put it on Substack, which we decided. But I got to wait till my back gets fixed up, because watching that, it's so insufferable to sit there and listen to. But they derive at these narratives because the other side's not allowed to speak. You're going to get chastised and called a racist and pro-slavery and whatever. I mean, even though Lincoln and Grant had plans to move blacks out of America and colonize Panama and have them dig a canal. Didn't even want Pete stuff. This, if I was to quote Lincoln, you'd get banned from YouTube for hate speech. They know nothing about it. They know nothing about the war. They know nothing about the event. They don't they know nothing about Reconstruction. Either they want to go around and tear down monuments and things. They want to tear down George Washington, but they put up a monument of George Floyd, George Fentanyl, who is, you know, pulls a gun out on a pregnant woman, B&E, about to drive a car high out of his mind on methane. And
I think we should have built one to Rosenbaum instead. That guy's an upstanding
with the nuts missing. I think we should have one of Kyle Rittenhouse sitting down with a smoking gun that says tread on them. I think we should have one for Julian Assange, Ed Snowden, or Mordecai Vanunu, real whistleblowers. That these are the people to honor, not fucking George Floyd. Like, that guy was a career criminal who had died of a heart attack because he had every drug. He had more drugs in his system than Ozzy Osbourne. But immediately, like, but he was black and one of the cops was white. So it must have been a racist hate crime. La, 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 la. Yeah, the cop was kneeling on his neck, as they do to everybody of every color. And where do they learn that? Where do our police go and get trained? Oh, yeah. That place. Why is that place training our cops? Can we not train our cops to abuse people ourselves? Like, do we not know how to do that? But that knee on the neck is something they do to Palestinians all the time, even to children. Fuck them with a cactus.
All right, Ryan, I know you gotta run, but
you can hear the little one in the back, right? Yeah. I'll mute this.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so Adam, I've got your YouTube and I've got your Twitter in the description, but where else can people keep up with what you're doing?
Well, I mean, people just Google my name, Adam Fitzgerald, and then type in 9/11. I just come right up. I have Medium where I do written work. My WordPress is filled with documents and files. YouTube channel is where I upload all the videos. I do have an Odyssey account just to back up. And I'm on Twitter, sure. And my podcast is The Darkened Hour. It's on Podbean.
For now.
Right.
You're next.
Yeah.
You're next.
Well, it's so. Just Ryan, then me. It's just going to go clockwise, you know. but yeah, thanks for coming on, Adam. It was great. And Nelson, where can people follow you?
Twitter, YouTube. I'm also on Patreon. Truther TV is my channel. I think it appears as Patreon as well. I have an Odyssey account. I have a BitChute. I also have one blog, 9/11 Skeptics versus Truth, which I don't write a whole lot, but I've got a few interesting things up there. And that's pretty much it. I mean, unless you're already my friend on Facebook, which I don't even use that much anymore anyway.
All right, Ryan, what about you?
I'm not allowed on Patreon or PayPal or YouTube or Twitter or Facebook or any of that stuff. So I have a Substack, a Telegram, a BitChute, an Odyssey, Gab. but mainly it's my own website, ANCReport.com. And we're talking about the COOF right now. And this interview will go up there as well. Rand Paul sticking it to him. ANCReport.com. Follow our Substack and you can or become a member on ANC. It's kind of the same material. So whatever you prefer. The advantage of Substack is you get a notification through your email. Whereas ANC, if you don't like getting notifications and you just want to go somewhere every day, just bookmark it and do it that way. That's where they can find my stuff. I have I don't know if it's my sixth or seventh Twitter account, Raina. Raina Kawa on YouTube. She's even got two strikes right now. So that one's not going to last. So yeah, I would just go to my website if you want to follow what I'm doing. And we have a tab there called 9/11 Truth for Grownups. Goes over very concisely what should have been said. And at dancingisraelis.com, that's mine. You can go read about that. Right, dancingisraelis.com, yeah. Check it out. Cool. Civil War stuff, DawsonTime.com.
And yeah, like I said at the beginning of the video, I'm banned off of Twitter, probably not getting reinstated. Follow me on Odyssey. I've got that linked in the description because yeah. I don't know when YouTube is going to happen, but that's probably going to be next. So like Ryan's been saying in all these videos, these mainstream platforms are pretty much just temporary for us. So make sure you go follow me somewhere more permanent too. But yeah, thanks to all you guys for coming on. This was great.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
A lot of fun, and it was very informative.
Awesome. Thank you for having me on.